Hello. I just wanted to say, Sharon, that when I came on, it sounded like your record was stuck, but in a very good way. You said something like, I am willing, and I am willing, and I am willing, or something very similar to that. So I understood that. My heart understood exactly what you were talking about. So I just returned to my PC. I've been with... I had a guest come this morning, and then I took my dog out for a walk, and I just returned to the PC to see the breaking news, which some of you may know about, that Brent Haskell said that, you know, his inner voice, Jeshua, has led him to come to Miracles in the Mountains, which is the conference, of course, that Kathy Scott Perry has put together for right here, only 25 miles from my house in Canyon City at a place called The Abbey in October. I believe the dates are October 12 to 14. So, I mean, I think Kathy is throwing the best party that I have seen in a long time, and I am not joking about that. You know, Brent Haskell has not made a public appearance, well, in my spiritual lifetime. JM, John Mark Hammer, has been out of the country, I think I heard, for 7 years. Of course, Mary Perrone, as far as I know, has never spoken at a conference. Phoebe Lorne and Sylvain Deblay together have never spoken at a conference. I'm kind of the old hat there, the one that, you know, you can catch anytime, anywhere. Oh, and Gary Renard, he's an old hat too. Gary and I are old hats, but everybody else is kind of, it's a unique opportunity to catch these people anywhere. And they're all going to be in one place. Imagine that, just 25 miles from my house. How lucky am I? So in honor of this latest acquisition, Brent Haskell, I have a little song I want to play. You ready? Here we go.
Here dancing. Let's celebrate. Come on now. Let's celebrate. We're gonna have a good time tonight. Let's celebrate. It's alright. We're gonna have a good time tonight. Let's celebrate. It's alright. We're gonna have a good time tonight. Let's celebrate.
Alright, I'm turning that down now, but... I think the song fully captures the spirit. I think that, you know, this has really turned out to be quite a party or quite a conference. Unbelievable. Really unbelievable. And I'll tell you what, if you haven't signed up yet, I think now is a good time. I've never seen a gathering of people like this before. I think it's very exciting, and I'm lucky to... be living right here where it's all going to happen. We're going to follow that celebration with a little bit of silence here. But by the way, Miracles in the Mountains will also be followed by a silent retreat. So if anyone is interested, you can follow that party with silence too. I'll post some links in a moment with more information. But first, what I'd like to do is go ahead and go right into silence. So if you all would join me, that would be terrific. Amen. All right, if anybody is listening to the radio and you won't have the benefit of seeing the links that I'm posting in the room, what you can do is go to www.reginadonacres.com, and from reginadonacres.com on the right-hand menu, just look for my events and gatherings link and click on that, and then you can find out information about Miracles in the Mountains, a conference with the scribes, which is October 12, 13, and 14. And then you can also find out about the silent retreat at the Abbey, which is at the same location starting October 14 and going until the 18th. So it's two separate events, but it's very easy to fly in and attend both events. That's kind of how it was planned. So in the room, the first link I'm giving you is the link to the Miracles for the Mountains, Miracles in the Mountains conference with the scribes, if you want to click on that and look at that information. And then the second link that I'm giving you is for the silent retreat. And again, everybody else can find that, but going to reginadonacres.com and then clicking on the events and gatherings link. So this is pretty exciting. Actually, I kind of knew all along that Brent Haskell would eventually say yes. We just did not know when.
Did he say yes?
He said yes today.
Oh,
yeah. We kind of always knew that that would happen, though, didn't we? You know, we just...
Like Kathy, how she called.
Yeah, we were just waiting for him to know. So today was the day, and it's kind of fun. Actually, the conference was planned in Canyon City, which is his hometown, because to make it easy on him to come, because he was the inspiration for the conference in the first place. So now he has just received the guidance, so we're excited about that. All right, we are here now for the 7 Steps to Awakening, and actually before I start with number 208, I want to read something to you all. This is something that I did post on my Facebook page today, so it can be found there, but a few times since I've been teaching from the 7 Steps, Step 1, I have mentioned a story about a cook that cooked for Ramana Maharshi and how this story inspired me. But I very seldom have the story right here in front of me in order to read it to you. And so I end up telling it. But, you know, I'm never quite as good at telling stories, I think, because I don't remember details well. So I happened to run across the story this morning, and so I posted on my Facebook page as kind of like a place marker so I'd know exactly where to go and get it so I could read it to you. So here's the story. It's very brief. One day, when Ramana Maharshi came into the kitchen, the sambar preparation was boiling in a big vessel. Bhagavan just asked, "Is it still on the fire or is it not?" Then Lokama, the cook, said, "Yes, it has to boil further." Bhagavan appreciated her, saying, "Only Lokama understands, only Lokama listens to me and makes the sambar complete its boiling. The rest of the people, in their haste, take it away half-cooked." And I have mentioned to you all that this particular paragraph, it was like an 850-page book, but this one paragraph is what stood out to me the most from that book. You know, it really seemed to say to me that, there is a huge temptation to declare enlightenment before awakening is complete. And this really seemed to say to me, just don't do that. It doesn't matter how strong the temptation gets. It doesn't matter if everyone else tells you that you are wrong. Do not do that. Stay until the sambar is completely cooked. Do not take it away half-cooked. So, again, this is the story that inspired me. And there, I got to share it word for word. And if you want to see more, just go to my Facebook page. It is the top post at this moment. Of course, you know how things are in Facebook. It may move down a bit as other things get posted, but it's right there, right this second. Okay, today we are going to begin with quote number 208. We are on the last few quotes of step one in the seven steps to awakening. So maybe, depending on how much I talk in the next 45 minutes, maybe we will finish step one today. If you're listening on the radio and you want to read along, you can just go to RDA7, that is the digit 7, it is not spelled out, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com, RDA7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. When you get to that website, you just want to choose step 1 from the menu bar, and then find the set of numbers that will allow you to make your way to number 208. And find number 208, and that's where we are. By the way, last night I discovered there are advertisements on the WordPress blog. I have since learned that those advertisements are legitimate. They are not viruses or a hack or anything like that. WordPress put them there. And I can upgrade to a paid version of WordPress, and they will go away. So when I get the opportunity to do that, I will do that. But for now, those are legitimate advertisements. So if you are in the mood to watch a commercial, you may click on them. Otherwise, you can also just ignore them. All right, I'm going to read number 208 from the Seven Steps to Awakening. I am on page 46, and the person being quoted now is named Sri Sankara. "There is no higher cause of joy than silence, where no mind pictures dwell. It belongs to him who has understood the self's own being, who is full of the essence of the bliss of the self." Again, there is no higher cause of joy than silence where no mind pictures dwell. It belongs to him who has understood the self's own being, who is full of the essence of the bliss of the self. So let's look at number 208. And this is what is written in the journal. "Absolute silence, the wellspring of all that is. Because it is present, it can be known. It can be realized. It can be the resting point of awareness." Probably one thing that's important to me about this particular journal entry is that I certainly have heard teachers who have said things like, there will always be thoughts. You know, there's no such thing as silence. There will always be thoughts. The best you can do is learn not to listen to them, learn not to believe them. And if that's true, then I'm pretty much at the best you can do right now. I might as well quit because my mind yaps a lot. I mean, it yaps. It just does. And I already know not to listen to it. I don't believe it's yapping. I don't. I mean, it has numerous stories that it tells, and I forget them very quickly because I'm not listening to them, because I'm not believing. It's just, you know, chattering away about this and that and this and that, and I don't pay it any attention. But what this tells me is that is not the best that we can do. This tells me there is an absolute silence. An absolute silence can be known because the absolute silence is real. Mind is not real. These yapping thoughts are not reality. The absolute silence is real. And because it is real and mind is not real, the absolute silence can be known. It can be directly experienced. It can be the resting point of awareness. You know, I'm sure I've told this story before too, because it's one of those few things that has just always stuck with me. But when I was in third grade, we had a field day near the end of the year, and I was doing the long jump. And I wanted to jump to a certain point. I'll say it was 3 feet. But every time I jumped, I only jumped to 2 feet. And maybe I was getting frustrated. I don't remember. But I remember the teacher came and talked to me. And she said, "Well, when you get ready to jump, what are you looking at?" And I said, 3 feet, because that's how far I want to jump. And she said, "If you want to jump to 3 feet, you have to look at 4 feet." That has always stuck with me. And it seems like what she said that day had to do with a lot more than just long jumping. And it seems to me that if I set my sights on going no further than having a yapping mind that I don't believe in, I don't know, it just doesn't seem helpful. It seems like it's much better to go ahead and know that there is an absolute silence that is just beyond description as far as its beauty and its bliss goes. And although, you know, I don't know how the absolute experience is achieved. I don't know, you know, when. I don't know anything about that. Just to know, even to say it is possible sounds ridiculous, because it really is inevitable. But, you know, what keeps ringing in my mind is not to settle for less. I think I keep hearing that at the end of the at the end of step one in the 7 steps, I keep hearing that there is a mind desire to declare enlightenment that is not yet that absolute experience, and not to settle for that mind desire. Do not settle for less than the full knowledge of self. And I'm okay with that message. So, absolute silence, the wellspring of all that is. Because it is present, it can be known. It can be realized. It can be the resting point of awareness. All right, enough said. So let's scroll down, and on the left you'll see number 209. And what I am going to do is post that link in the room. Okay, and then I'm going to read from number 209 in the 7 Steps to Awakening, and it says, "Through unwavering ecstasy is clearly understood the reality of the eternal, fixed and sure. This cannot be when other thoughts are confused with it by the motions of the mind." Again, "Through unwavering ecstasy is clearly understood the reality of the eternal, fixed and sure. This cannot be when other thoughts are confused with it by the motions of the mind. All right, so number 209 in the journal. Awareness anchored in Source knows the ever constant joy of being self. When this joy is not ever constant, it is because mind masquerades as self, and the folly of this masquerade has not been seen. Last night, the very last quote that we looked at was number 207. And the journal entry for number 207 gave us four criteria by which we can self-check if we want to and see if our enlightenment is a true realization of self or whether it was just a mind enlightenment that came about because mind wanted so much to be enlightened. And one of those four criteria was that the absolute, the supreme, the source, the truth, is changeless, unchanging. There's no difference in it. And so another description that I sometimes read from people is that their experience of enlightenment does have anger in it. Their experience of enlightenment, I've read, does have jealousy in it. I've read that. You know, probably sadness and other things too. I just distinctly remember reading anger and jealousy. You know, but it's just seeing that these things just come and go, that they aren't permanent. Again, I already have that experience. If, first of all, I actually don't experience much change in emotions. I am usually just happy, just clearly, joyously, openly happy. But if you look at things on a very large scale, like if you want to look, you know, at months instead of minutes, over a period of months, you know, I may have a period of experiencing something else. You know, like in January of this year, I experienced what I would call, what would I call that? It felt like, I've talked about it, I felt like ego was kind of being stirred up. Like maybe, you know, there was some ego sediments at the bottom of a glass of clear water, and that when I started the seven steps, it was like somebody shook that bottle of clear water, and so the sediment started to rise up again, right? Yeah, I guess I would call it a period of being unsettled. That's what it felt like, just being unsettled. I wasn't necessarily angry or there was some agitation associated with it. But I was completely able to see that it was temporary, that it came, and that I knew that it would go. And it did. I knew it wasn't truth. I knew it wasn't who I am. I knew that it was a temporary experience that was rising and that it would pass. But this doesn't talk about that. This doesn't talk about the absolute position as having different experiences. This says the absolute position is ever constant joy of being self. So what it seems to be saying to me is that if I have an experience where, you know, I see one emotion rise and then fall and another emotion rise and then fall, and obviously I don't take these emotions as seriously as I used to. I'm able to just observe them. I know that they come. I know that they go. That to declare that as some type of enlightenment or achievement is an error. Kind of the message that's coming into my mind as I keep reading this is that if I self-declare enlightenment, it's almost like I push the pause button on my own awakening. You know, obviously awakening is still going to happen because awakening happens for the whole. So obviously, you know, it's not, you could say it's, in that way, it's not, you know, like this really bad thing. It's not like a totally screwing up, you know, I don't know how else to say that. But it's like a pause button. You know, if I think, if I achieved something, then it's like I push pause. And the actual awakening process in time is somewhat delayed by the thinking that it's already happened. Now, what I also understand is And this is from people who have had this experience, because fortunately I've been lucky enough to know people who have self-declared their enlightenment, really thought they were enlightened, and then something happened along the way where they realized they were wrong. Because the ego is able to sneak back in, you know, if you're not alert because you think you're done. And so the good news is that when this enlightenment is self-declared and the ego sneaks back in at some point, what can happen is at that point it can be seen, wait a minute, you know, I'm experiencing a lot of frustration here. Or I'm experiencing a lot of anger here. Or, you know, something's not right. And then some of these people who have self-declared enlightenment, you could say, take it back and go back into student mode. So that's why I said it's just like a pause button, right? It can't actually stop your awakening. But it also seems like it's something we don't have to go through if we are alert to it prior to falling for the temptation. As I mentioned last night, I have seen this temptation in my mind, and I don't think I'm alone. Maybe I am. Maybe I'm the only one that ever sees the thought to declare myself enlightened. But I'm guessing that's not true. And in fact, it almost seems like in our current Facebook type of environment, it almost seems like there's peer pressure to declare yourself enlightened, just like there used to be peer pressure to smoke pot, you know. I did, by the way, smoke the pot and much more. But I'm thinking I'm going to pass on peer pressure now. I'm thinking that I learned my lesson, that maybe I don't need to do that again. Maybe I don't need to be one of the gang of enlightened people. Part of the popular crowd. It's like the popular crowd for people over 40, right? in the spiritual circle. Yeah. As I mentioned last night, although this guidance came, you know, I was telling a friend of mine this morning, this guidance came ad nauseum, you know, just repetitively at the end of step one, to the point that when I sat down and find out, okay, I'm teaching the same topic again, even my mind says, oh God, aren't we done with this yet? So like, if you're sick of hearing me talk about this, I get it. But if it's this repetitive, it's got to be for a reason, don't you think? Step one, by the way, the purpose of step one, let me go back. Every one of the seven steps to awakening has an objective at the beginning. Step one is know the difference between A, using the teachings as practice instructions, and B, getting lost or stuck in concepts. Know the difference between those two things. That's the objective of step one. So, and what it seems like step one taught is that there are really two ways to get lost or stuck in the concepts. One way is at that heavy intellectual way that probably happened to the Course community for some time, where we sat around debating what the Course was about. We all knew the Course at an intellectual level, and we thought that studiousness, that scholarly-like knowing of the Course and what it meant something. Well, now I think that most of us know it didn't. I really do think that if we generalize and take the Course community as a whole, the vast majority of us have realized that that didn't mean a thing. You know, that didn't mean a thing. We got that. It was just a phase we went through, but we got that now. But the second one might actually be a phase we're still in. And maybe, you know, the second way that we get lost or stuck in the concepts is with this false mind enlightenment, where the mind looks at the concepts so much and imagines the concepts so much that it begins to think it has achieved the concepts, but it's actually still at a conceptual level. But the mind thinks, that's it, I'm here, I've done it, I'm enlightened, I'm one of them. And so in order to fulfill the objectives of step one, to know the difference between using the teachings as practice instructions and getting lost or stuck in the concepts, it has to paint a clear picture for us about what getting lost in the concepts looks like. And so that's why there's so much repetitiveness here. We may have passed the first one. I'm not certain that we've fully passed the second one yet. Not as a generalization. I think in order to get beyond that wanting to declare ourselves enlightened, maybe we need a little bit of repetition, and our heart really needs to be stroked, because our heart certainly doesn't want that for us. We just have to make sure our heart is louder to us than our mind is. But the heart's desire for sincere truth, sincere awakening, sincere seeing is louder to us than our mind's eager wanting to be enlightened or to be seen as enlightened by others. So number 209, awareness anchored in source knows the ever constant joy of being self. When this joy is not ever constant, it is because mind masquerades as self, and the folly of this masquerade has not been seen. So if I am not happy always, literally always, then no, I might as well keep using these teachings as practice instructions rather than declaring myself enlightened. So the fact that I was unhappy in January, and who knows, I might be unhappy again next September, means I just need to keep right on working, right? I'm happy with that. Okay, so you can scroll down and click on number 210. And I am going to give you a copy of that link. And number 210 says, and this is again in the book, not yet at the link, whose being neither intellect nor reason knows, this is the eternal, that thou art. And by the way, if you don't have the book, it's kind of interesting to notice that thou art is typed in all caps. So although we seem to have a teaching here not to declare ourselves enlightened prematurely, not to see ourselves as enlightened when we are not, at the same time, the one who is doing this teaching is emphasizing that is what we are. Again, I was talking to a friend this morning. I said, this really reminds me of, in A Course in Miracles, at least in the original and sparkly edition. I don't honestly remember if this is in the Foundation for Inner Peace version. But at least in the sparkly, in the original edition, in the Miracle Principles, Jesus says something like, and I'm paraphrasing here, but Jesus says something like, he is the same love that we are. The only difference is that's all that he is. There's nothing left but that love. In our case, it's the love plus. And so what we're here to do is to allow the plus to be undone, or to remove the plus and get back to being just the love. But it's not that we have to actually achieve enlightenment. You could argue, you know, and I wouldn't argue with you because I think you'd be right. You could say, maybe I won't use the word argue, you could say enlightenment is here. Enlightenment is present now. But to me, that's not the same statement as saying I am enlightened. The question is, who is the I that is enlightened, you know? But it's not like enlightenment is not here within or as each and every one of us, because it is. Enlightenment, awakening, truth has never gone anywhere. It's just that other stuff is still added on top. We're still in the process of erasing, of undoing. And to declare that process complete when it isn't complete is to push on the pause button. And we just don't have to do that. We can. It won't hurt, ultimately. But we don't have to, either. So again, number 210 in the book says, whose being neither intellect nor reason knows, this is the eternal, that thou art. Right? Not will be someday, but thou art now. All right, let's look at number 210 in the journal. One can know self because it is self. Mind cannot know self because self is before mind. One identified with mind may try many paths to self through mind. Each of these paths must ultimately fail, because mind's paths all end in dead end. If this process is experienced enough times, mind responds by saying there is no self. Nothing exists that is outside or before mind. This is not so. Mind becoming aware of its own limited nature does not imply that limitlessness does not exist. It only proves that limitlessness does not exist in mind. This is when one must begin to seriously question, what am I? So this really makes perfect sense that as long as we are still identified with the mind as what we are, then we want the mind to be enlightened. Then I am enlightened. Right? So we're seeking, you could say, mind enlightenment. We're seeking mind enlightenment because we still think that's who we are. And this is why, again, the temptation to find and fall into mind enlightenment exists, because in a way that is our goal. That is our goal. But every path to mind enlightenment eventually fails, because that's not truth. Only truth can be eternal. And again, what this particular journal entry is saying is, instead of continuing to seek mind enlightenment, instead of I want to be enlightened, I want to be enlightened, how do I become enlightened? Instead of that question, ask, what am I? What am I? Don't seek enlightenment. Seek truth. It's not the same thing. That's what this says. Seeking the goal of enlightenment can lead right smack dab into that pause button we're talking about. So don't seek enlightenment. Just start seeking truth. What am I? It's a completely different question. Mind is behind one, heart is behind the other. You literally stop seeking enlightenment. Literally stop seeking enlightenment. Give it up completely. And just start inquiring for truth. What am I? And then let that which you are lead you to the realization or the remembrance of truth. But forget enlightenment, because it can just create a delay, a distraction. It's a slightly similar sounding goal. It's similar enough that it can easily lead you off in the wrong direction, off into a pause. So, one can know self because it is self. I mean, of course we can know ourself. It's what we are. Of course we can know ourself. It is what we are. But mind cannot know self. And see, right now our problem is still being identified with mind. Mind cannot know self because self is before mind. One identified with mind may try many paths to self through mind. Each of these paths must ultimately fail, which is why they're no more than a pause button, because mind's paths all end in dead end. If this process is experienced enough times, mind responds by saying there is no self. Nothing exists that is outside or before mind. So that's another pause, thinking that there is no truth. This is not so. Mind becoming aware of its own limited nature does not imply that limitlessness does not exist. It only proves that limitlessness does not exist in mind. This is when one must begin to seriously question, what am I? It's abandoning the idea I am mind. It's abandoning the desire for mind enlightenment, for I to be enlightened. And it's with this question we begin to seek the truth. All right, you can scroll down and on the left, click on number 211. And there is a link to number 211 in the room. I'm going to take a drink, and then I'll read number 211 from the book. Number 211. Freedom is one by a perception of the self's oneness with the eternal, and not by the doctrines of union or of numbers, nor by rites and sciences. Freedom is won by a perception of the self's oneness with the eternal, and not by the doctrines of union or of numbers, nor by rites and sciences. All right, so number 211 in the journal says, freedom from mind is not one with mind. The grace of seeing reveals freedom. Discontinue all efforts of mind. They are no longer of any value. Well, we're not quite to the end of step one yet. We still have two more quotes after this. But as a wrapping up of step one, as a wrapping up of this objective, this is a perfect statement. Discontinue all efforts of mind. I feel that's what step one wanted to get us to, or wanted to get me to. Step one wanted to get to a complete being done with trying to be somehow enlightened with mind. Whether it's in that scholarly way or in that imaginative, false enlightenment way. Be just being done with that. Completely done. That's why I think it was so repetitive. That's why there were 213 statements on this topic. To get us to the point of being done. That's why I started this in November and finished it in February. Hitting the same ideas over and over every day to get me to the point of being done. Done with mind. And I got so done that it's like I don't even care if I understand at the intellectual level anymore. And I have no interest in appearing enlightened. In fact, none. None. And in fact, a part of that I need to watch, I feel like, because there's almost like a... You know, I could see a bit of a desire to just like pull out of the spiritual community, which I know isn't my guidance, so I'm not doing that. I see that as like, you know, how the pendulum can swing in the opposite direction. Just like pull out completely, you know. Well, I'll say in the Brent Haskell way, you know, although Brent Haskell is coming back in October, Brent Haskell has been kind of pulled out of the spiritual community, not talking to anyone. If you do get the chance to talk to him, he'll say he's studying the Course in his own way. It's not that he quit the spiritual path, it's that he pulled out of the community. And I see that in me, but I also know that that's not actually guidance. That's coming from the ego also. The ego just saying, okay, well, if you're not going to be one of the enlightened popular ones, why don't we just not have anything to do with anyone? and somehow neither one is right. Right? The rightness is to stay in the middle by listening to my guidance in each moment. So I won't be pulling out. But that's how done I became, that the ego had to grab onto the doneness and offer another suggestion, right? And again, that was the purpose of step one, to get us done with wanting some kind of mind achievement. Whether it was being able to quote the Course perfectly and know the page number that everything is on, or whether it's being, you know, one of these mind-enlightened people. Did not want either one of those things. That's the purpose of step one. So freedom from mind is not one with mind. The grace of seeing reveals freedom. Grace. discontinue all efforts of mind. They are no longer of any value. All right, let's scroll down and click on number 212. And I'm going to give you a link. There's the link to 212. And now I'm going to read 212 from the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. An eloquent voice, a stream of words, skill in explaining the teaching, and the learning of the learned. These bring enjoyment, but not freedom. An eloquent voice, a stream of words, skill in explaining the teaching, and the learning of the learned. These bring enjoyment, but not freedom. All right, let's look at number 212 in the journal. A different path is being chosen now. Again, this is a good ending to step one because you can see that the objective was accomplished in my mind, right? It was seen. A different path is being chosen now. It is not the path of teaching learning. It leaves all teaching learning behind because it is the unchartered path of undefined guidance, intuition, and grace. Okay, so what this says for me is, up until now, there has been mind involvement. Now, I've been fortunate in that there's also been a lot of intuition involvement on my part. Obviously, you know, NTI was intuition, not mind. The teachings of Inner Ramana, intuition, not mind, as well as, you know, many other parts of my path. But there was an admitting here that there had also been mind. Mind wanting to intellectually understand at some points, and mind wanting to be enlightened. And, you know, again, maybe I'm the only one. Maybe I'm not. Maybe we can all see this in us. We can say, yep, my mind has wanted to play that way too. And whether it's teaching and learning at the intellectual level, like reading A Course in Miracles and trying to intellectually understand it, or whether it's teaching and learning at the mind enlightenment level, which means listening to people who, you know, say they have the experience of enlightenment and then kind of trying to have the same experience in a mind way. Like, you know, I remember reading about Byron Katie. You know, one of her things is about washing the dishes and 1,000 names for joy. You know, she talks about how she was washing the dishes. Then I think the doorbell rang, so she started to walk towards the door. And then the phone rang, and she turned and started to walk towards the phone. And then she fell, and the floor caught her. And it's such a beautiful description. And I remember washing the dishes and trying to imagine the same experience. I mean, I know that if that type of behavior had continued for long, there could have been a lot of imagining of having that experience. And the interesting thing is, if I had never read it, I could have never tried to imagine it. And I think this is the primary reason that in my case, I was asked to stop reading, stop listening now, and just go back to sitting in my chair with myself. Because in that way, everything that's coming is very authentic. See, that was a type of teaching learning. You know, reading a description and then trying to have that same experience myself. And at the end of step one, I felt done with that. Say, okay, I get it. That's not real. I get it. So a different path is being chosen now. It is not the path of teaching learning. It leaves all teaching learning behind because it is the uncharted path of undefined guidance, intuition, and grace, which means I have no idea what guidance, intuition, and grace are going to do with me in the next moment. Again, I'm not the one figuring out how this awakening is going to happen. For me, it's a mystery. And I'm settling in the mystery and letting it happen. Or as Rumi said, whoever brought me here has to take me home. That's where I've settled. Whoever brought me here has to take me home. I'm not doing it with my mind. I quit. I think the Course says, I need do nothing. I need to do nothing. All right, you can scroll down and click on number 213. This is the last quote in step one. Okay, number 213 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, through information, digging, and casting aside the stones, a treasure may be found, but not by calling it to come forth. Again, this is coming from a teacher named Sri Sankara. Through information, digging, and casting aside the stones, a treasure may be found, but not by calling it to come forth. All right, let's look at number 213 in the journal. One must do this work if one wants to realize the truth that is to be uncovered. And by this work, I mean following that inner guidance. Being with that inner guidance day in and day out and following it. Now, in my case, right now, I can't tell you about tomorrow, but right now, that inner guidance is taking the form of a very deep self-inquiry and looking. And so there is something happening. It's not like I am saying, okay, that's it. I'm not doing anything, and awakening will just happen when awakening happens. That's not the process I feel guided through. It's actually guiding me to sit with it every day. There are questions that are being asked. There is seeing that is being given. There is realizing that is being achieved, that is happening. You could call that, you could say there's information digging and casting aside stones, right? I mean, there's something going on in me that is very deep, and it is a type of work, but it's led. Every ounce of it is led. Every ounce of it is mysterious. None of it is planned. None of it is following some formula that I read somewhere else in some book that I'm supposed to follow. I'm not doing anything, which is what this quote means when it says, through information, digging, and casting aside the stones, a treasure may be found. And then it says, but not by calling it to come forth. The I that would call it to come forth, the I that would ask for, again, enlightenment. Well, that I isn't anything. It isn't real. And it would only be empowered if it could demand enlightenment, and then enlightenment would answer. So that's the I that needs to do nothing. I need do nothing. But that doesn't mean that nothing is done. There's something leading here. That's something, again, Course in Miracles students would call the Holy Spirit, but not everyone would call it that. It could be called intuition. It could be called grace. It could be called, lately I've been calling it inquiry. I say the inquiry leads. but it is definitely beyond the person mind. So we're at the end of step one. And what step one did was ask us, in effect, to do two things. One, give up trying to achieve with the mind. And two, but follow the practice. Some people may find those to be contradictory, but they really aren't. And at least for me, somehow at the end of step one, I understand that. And so I follow the practice and I've given up on on the idea of I being enlightened. And it's kind of funny, the reason I paused so long before saying that is because when there's still this experience of I, Regina, and yet at the same time you're saying you give up on the idea of I being enlightened, what you're left with is a mystery. What you're left with is a great big blank. You know, what you find yourself saying is, you know, I'm still doing this. I'm still following, but I haven't got a clue what the end result is going to be. I mean, I can't imagine not being me. So it's something I can't imagine. And that's funny because, you know, NTI told me that years ago, that it was something I can't imagine. So I accept that. I'm accepting the mystery that guides me and the mystery that it's guiding me to. And I'm happy now. I'm happy with not knowing anything about what the hell the spiritual path means. I'm happy with not having the answers. I'm happy with not being one of the wise ones, one of the ones that knows everything. I'm very happy because somehow it feels like I'm right where I'm supposed to be, like I'm not pushing the pause button. Like I'm right where I'm supposed to be. That somehow I've been led into a very honest and sincere seat, albeit it's not the popular enlightened seat. There's something about it that just feels honest. Integrus, if that's a word, that's the word that came. I don't know if it's even a word. Integrus. I guess I'll have to look it up when I get done. So on Sunday night, I will have the distinct pleasure of starting step two, which is where I still am, by the way. I'm still on step two. Step two begins with Sri Ramana Maharshi at number 214. I'm somewhere around like 456 or something like that, and I'm still not done with step two. So if you thought step one was repetitive, get ready. Because there's going to be a lot more of that in step two. But if the objective to step two is achieved as well as the objective of step one was, at least for me, this is going to be the most magnificent experience that I've had on this path of awakening. Even with NTI coming and Inner Ramana and everything else, this is going further and it's great, and yet I still don't know where the hell it's going because I can't imagine not being me. And that's it. I'm done for today. Everybody have a great day. Bye.